How and when will we transition to a clean energy future?
How have wetlands become both crucial carbon sinks and colossal methane emitters in a warming world?
What lessons can we learn from non-human animals about living in greater harmony with nature?
This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
So if you take things like subsidies, and there could be consumption or production subsidies, it's less than a trillion. But then if you add in the costs of climate change and other damages which are done by using the fossil fuels, we come up to this figure of 5 trillion. And actually in the last few years, it's been more than that. It's been up to 6 to 7 trillion as well. So if you compare it, for example, with the amount that the governments of the West are supposed to supply each year in climate finance, that's 100 billion. So that's about 1/50 of the amount that we're actually subsidizing the fossil fuel industry, which is the major cause of the problem.
Methane has been made probably since almost the beginning of life. And early on, it was probably very important in keeping this planet habitable so that the seas didn't freeze up. Long ago, the sun was much fainter. It's only 3/4 or 80% of the brightness of today, and the planet would have frozen. And clearly, for long periods, life made methane. If we didn't have natural methane, natural CO2 in the atmosphere, the temperature would be 30-some centigrade cooler than it is today. We'd be frozen. So the natural greenhouse is really, really important. And of the two major greenhouse gases, CO2 is the one everyone thinks about, and that's around for a long time. Methane has a shorter lifetime, different ways of defining it, but it's about a decade. And it's actually destroyed by reactions in the atmosphere. And it's made by swamps, and a cow is just a walking swamp, but it's also made by wetlands. It's also made in fires, and then it's natural gas mostly. The smell of natural gas is actually introduced, so you can smell it. You can't smell methane itself. And what's been happening in, what happened in the 1980s was methane was rising very fast in the air, and that was largely leaks from the gas industry. And to some extent from the coal industry as well. Plus, of course, more cows and all sorts of things like that. But as we introduce more cows, we wipe out lots of wild animals and they make methane too.
Minnesota Power and Elite have a very strong, forward-looking, action-based strategy. And we actually call it sustainability in action. We are about identifying the energy solutions that are needed to continue to decarbonize and make our energy solutions cleaner and higher environmentally performanced. So the Minnesota Power and its customers here in Northeast Minnesota made that decision about a decade ago that we were going to start moving in this direction and ensuring that we could take the right time and the pace and the path that was thoughtful with our customers and communities to transform. And through the past decade of very hard work with our communities and our customers, and obviously a lot of new great technology in wind and solar and hydro, we have been able to transform from a 95% fossil-based portfolio to 50 to 60% clean energy. And so we basically, in the last decade, worked to reduce our carbon by half and increase our renewable energy production by, 50 to 60%. So it's been a very exciting time.
You're asking for me to reflect on the future that we're leaving for future generations. We're on a fairly bad trajectory, the way that we're going forward. We're contaminating our planet and rapidly changing its climate in a way that will probably wreak a lot of havoc in the years to come, and that will create a lot of suffering, both for human beings and for non-human creatures that live in our planet. So that's a kind of pessimistic thought. I think that human beings are very adaptable and very ingenious and industrious in the ways that we're able to adapt. So I would like to hope that we will have ways of trying to grapple with the crises that we're bringing upon ourselves in the future, and that there are ways forward. But my worry is that that ingeniousness and industriousness will be available only to the well-off and not to the destitute and poor on our planet. For me, this is a social and political question. How is it that we can ensure that the wealth and technologies that we're using to adapt to a rapidly changing climate will be used in a way that is equitable across various societies on this planet?
One of the key themes of the book is that what drives growth in the end is technological progress. We discover new ideas about the world. We discover new ways of making use of finite resources that we have. And another word for that is that we generate technological progress. And so one of the arguments of the book is that we have a choice. We not only have more or less growth, but we can also change the nature of growth. The same is true of our technologies too. It's the same story. We can have more technological progress and less technological progress, but we can also have different types of technological progress. We can develop technologies in society that make us more prosperous, but also don't damage the environment, don't widen inequalities in society. And so actually, deeper down, it really is a book about technology, because at the moment, I think we've got the wrong kind. And those two previous books are a kind of look at arguably the sort of wrong kind of technological progress.
I'd love young people to feel connected to nature and feel a delight in being part of nature. I'd love young people to feel masters of their own minds, to realize that actually they have the potential to control their anxiety, to control their anger, to choose how they feel. It's not easy, but you can learn to do that. Many of the Eastern practices, mindfulness and things, have been very important. I'd love young people to feel... So if you think of the four horsemen for dealing with AI, I'd love young people to feel the joy of being conscious, embodied creatures in the natural world with values and connected to other joyful, embodied creatures. I mean, if you can just get people really accessing these things and then creating societies that share the incredible bounty, now, that's, of course, a real Shangri-La I'm envisaging, but why not dream about that?
We warm up the planet, the Earth gives off more methane and warms us up more. And that's feedback. You push it one way and then something pushes it even further. And that's actually probably the biggest challenge to the Paris Agreement hopes now. Methane stabilized in late 1990s and early 2000s. And then it took off again, but this time it's taken off in a very different way. And we think that largely the recent rise has been driven by warming wetlands, especially in the tropics, but also in Canada and the Russian Arctic, Siberia. As you warm up the planet, although some areas get drier, a warmer world is actually a wetter world. You evaporate more water and more water falls. So it's going to rain like crazy in places like Uganda or Kenya, which is what it's doing right now. And then these wetlands spread, and if the wetlands are hotter, they also make more methane. And you can tell that by a rather clever trick. The different types of carbon, most of the carbon in us, and you know, we're carbon, is something called carbon 12. That's normal carbon. But about 1% of carbon is carbon 13. That's also perfectly ordinary natural carbon. You probably know about carbon 14 that the archaeologists use for dating. That's made up at the top of the atmosphere, and that's radioactive. But carbon 13, it's normal. It's about 1% of normal carbon. But the ratio of 12 to 13 varies depending on who made the methane. So if it's a wetland or a cow, there's a lot of 12. But if the methane comes from a gas field or a fire or a coal mine, it tends to be a little bit richer than the 13. And so for 200 years, as humans started burning fossil fuels, the methane in the air got a bit richer in carbon 13. But since 2007, it's been getting richer and quite quickly richer in carbon 12. That tells you it's biological sources. And a lot of that growth has been happening in the tropics, not all of it. And that suggests that it's tropical wetlands initially, also probably nowadays northern wetlands as well. Plus, of course, cows. And it's the biology is doing this. But it looks like an Earth feedback. We warm up the planet, and the Earth gives off more.
Loving where you live is so important, and taking care of your community and where you live, work, and play, in whatever profession that you do. For me, it's energy, and we need to continue to evolve and do better. That's what this transition is about. Transitioning to not only new technology that is emerging, but different ways of doing business and producing our products and working together to do that. I live in one of the most beautiful places in North America, in my view, on the tip of Lake Superior. And this clean water, the clean air, and the wonderful ability to stay warm in the winter means more than anything to me and my family. Working for the right companies with the right values is really an important part of keeping this all going.
We tend to say humans and animals, but really, we're all animals. Biology 101 teaches us that. And people tend to say, oh, such and such an animal share this human trait. They're not human traits. They're all shared traits. Because, of course, we all love our families or not. We all grieve if somebody we love disappears or dies, a family dog, perhaps, a grandfather. We all feel loneliness. We all feel joy. We all really value our freedom. And so I think, if anything, looking into the eyes of the animal, even online, you see a person in there. There's a someone in whatever the shape or the physical properties of that individual are. And that lesson is that I am you, you are me, only different. We are all the same in all the ways that count. Any living being teaches you, look into my eyes, and there you are.
We hope you've enjoyed this program. To hear more from these guests, listen to their full interviews. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button.
Thank you for listening.